Take a look across the cultural landscape, and you'll see lots of anti-heroes popping up like morally challenged meerkats. Characters like Walter White from Breaking Bad.
You clearly don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Or Tony Soprano.
Are you in the mafia?
That's total crap. Who told you that?
Dad, I've lived in the house all my life. I've seen police come with warrants. I've seen you going out at 3 a.m.
So you never seen Doc Cusimano go out at 3 a.m. on a call?
Did the Cusimano kids ever find $50,000 in Krugerrands and a .45 automatic while they were hunting for Easter eggs?
I'm in a waste management business. Everybody immediately assumes you're mobbed up.
Or Scarlett O'Hara.
Fiddle-dee-dee.
And the list goes on. Dexter, Catwoman, Hellboy, Don Draper, and basically everybody on Shameless. These days, when it comes to characters, things are complicated. And we love it. We can't get enough of these complex men and women whose qualities are less than admirable, wrought as they are of flaws and shadows. As media consumers, our voracious appetite for more anti-heroes reflects our own inner complexity. That's according to GLT's Psych Geeks Eric Wesselman and Scott Jordan, who both teach at Illinois State University's Department of Psychology. Wesselman says the question of what defines an anti-hero is kind of squishy, and that it all depends on how you want to define it.
The early definitions of anti-hero focused on having a protagonist who was flawed, yet sort of overwhelmed by their situation, right? So some people I've read have talked about, for example, Willie Loman from Death of a Salesman. But a lot of other definitions seem to key on, rather than someone being overwhelmed by their situation, a more traditional protagonist who is capable, but does things that are morally ambiguous. Right, things that maybe we in real life wouldn't approve of, yet this person is still the protagonist. They're still the quote-unquote hero role. But we can't call them a traditional hero.
Yeah, I think there's an additional way to look at. One, we can do the taxonomy of what is an anti-hero. We can try to spell out the space. Another thing to do is ask ourselves, what does trying to make that distinction reveal about us? In other words, why are we trying to binary these people between hero and anti-hero? And in my experience of these characters, what we're really sort of grappling at is, what are the things that are acceptable in our time? When people are having this conversation, part of what they're getting at is, what is it that we will unconditionally call good, and what is it that we're challenged to call good?
What attracts us as readers, as viewers, as curious individuals to an anti-hero? We see so many anti-heroes, no matter how you want to define them, in a lot of the media today. Sopranos, some of the superhero films that we see. One of my favorite anti-heroes was Maverick from the old TV series back in the 50s. So what attracts us to an anti-hero?
The writers are pushing the boundaries of what will qualify as good, even though these heroes, anti-heroes, might be saving people, defending the weak, defending the underrepresented. They're doing it with means that bourgeois culture might assume to be bad. Another way to look at all this is maybe the people that get to claim who heroes are the ones who are in the majority and in power. And a lot of these contemporary anti-heroes are actually people who don't have power, who aren't in the majority. And so by any means necessary, they try to help the repressed.
Eric, what's your take on that?
There are various theories on why people enjoy antiheroes, and there's probably a little bit of truth in all of them. Some people argue that it's identification, right? That we see something of ourselves in them, and that could be different, right? For some people, it might be wish fulfillment. I would love to go out there and be a vigilante in some situations, but I'm not going to because either I believe in my heart it's not right, or I just don't want to get caught. For other types of characters, like, for example, Dexter, who's, a serial killer who only kills worse people, some people have argued that maybe to enjoy that type of narrative, you have to morally disengage. And the data are mixed on that. I'm not as convinced by that theory. But I think this idea of realism is one that resonates with me, that in reality, humans are complex morally. And life is not a series of zero sum, like this is the way it always, Scott used the word taxonomy, right? It's not always clear cut. And so these morally ambiguous protagonists reflect that ambiguity that we face.
If I followed up on that, I would argue that the only reason anybody ever believes that it's clear is because they have the ability to believe that. They're in a safe, fairly clear space that stays pretty much the same. And as long as those conditions hold, they're able to believe that things are clear. The contemporary, what we might call antiheroes that we're seeing in all the Marvel stuff on Netflix, these are people that aren't part of that safe culture, and it's never clear for them, and they all struggle for clarity. So on the one hand, we can say they're the ones that are ambiguous, and the other people know what's clearly right. We could also add the only reason they know what's clearly right is because they're in power and because things are safe for them.
When we look over the arc of popular culture over the decades, do anti-heroes surface and dominate popular culture during certain portions of history? I'm thinking about like during the Vietnam War, perhaps the anti-hero was, you know, very popular and important for a cultural expression at that particular time.
You can look at them as transition states in culture. And when culture undergoes massive transitions, there's a reorganization of what is right or what is stable. On my list, my number two anti-heroes are Faust and Mephisto, who are characters in Goethe's Faust, written in the early 1800s, about a 15th, 16th century sorcerer or scholar.
But wouldn't the anti-hero exist in... as an example of how not to behave, as sort of an example of, you know, hey gang, as a way of getting away with putting up a bad character with a moral purpose?
Well, and so this gets at that idea of ambiguity and perhaps a continuum, right? You know, so we could set up an antihero as a foil for a hero, right? But also, where does that leave villains, right? And so if the sort of dichotomy is hero and villain, anti-hero might be that space in the middle, right? The one who walks the line like Johnny Cash.
Who will do what the hero won't do because the hero would find it morally repugnant.
Yeah, that reflects the ambiguity that we walk in on a daily basis.
Yeah, as long as you recognize that the two ends of the continuum, the villain and the hero, are contextually dependent on that culture. Mm-hmm. Right, then the anti-hero could be seen as a culturally ambiguous space.
Mm-hmm. One of the only sort of traditionally psychological perspectives on anti-heroes that I was able to find is written by a colleague of ours, Michael Spivey. He and his co-author sort of set up a taxonomy that has three dimensions to it. There's sort of the good or bad or good or evil means that a protagonist uses. There's sort of the good or evil ends. And then there is the certainty which with that character acts, right? And so looks at this very much like a continuum. The anti-hero space is someone who sometimes does the right things for the wrong reasons and other times does the wrong thing for the right reasons and has this struggle to some degree about what they're doing.
Does the dominance of the anti-hero in culture today herald a new social climate, do you guys think?
Yeah, absolutely. It's capitalizing on other aspects of culture, particularly Western culture right now. I think we're going culturally more holist. What I mean by that is the pendulum is swinging from the idea that we're all individual things in an empty space to the idea that we're all inherently connected to each other and all naturally about each other. And we're all part of one universe, dare I say. And I think you see the current anti-hero market sort of expressing the inescapability of context. We're all caught up in a real world. There's no way we can escape that real world other than through death. And we deal with the world as it is, and we're seeing the emergence, I think, of a type of hero who willfully walks into the beautifully ugly nature of reality. So instead of creating a story in which someone can end up being pure and clean at the end, I think culture's sort of giving up on that idea of purity and moving more towards an idea of engagement, embodiment, and contextuality. I think it's a sign of growth. I think you can sort of see a redo, a recapitulation in culture of what a developing individual goes through here, and that is an increase in complexity over the life course. And certain cultural zeitgeists come to be, and there develops a sort of clear, pure model of what that culture is about, what people in it should strive for. And over time, those things tend to dissolve, right? And they dissolve because the tensions for their dissolving are built into the system. So the irony of moments of cultural stability is that that's the way it's supposed to be, right? Nothing's supposed to be any particular way. Reality is a continuous flux. So I think the anti-hero is a sort of way for any culture, I mean, I talked about Faust earlier, to sort of dabble, tamper with, and look at what are the things that are keeping this stability propped up. We can call it an anti-hero, but I think that's just how we refer to it in the last 50 years. It's been around forever, and it's the inherent instability in any stable social system. And as long as people keep giving voice to it, which they're not allowed to do in oppressed societies, by the way, as long as they keep giving voice to it, like V for Vendetta, right, the growth will be possible.
That's Scott Jordan and Eric Wesselman, GLT's Psych Geeks, who teach in the Illinois State University Department of Psychology. I'm Laura Kennedy.